It's the New Mercury Podcast, and here's your host, Kyle A. Lohmeyer.
All right, so I am back here with really episode one of the New Mercury Podcast. I am, as I said a moment ago in that terrible intro, Kyle A. Lohmeyer, the proprietor of and sole original content provider to thenewmercury.com. The first episode, available on the website and through iTunes, was something of a proof-of-concept exercise to see if I could really figure out how to get a podcast up onto my website and then from there out into the world. With me and technology anymore, that was certainly no guarantee, but I occasionally surprise myself, and sometimes even in a good way, so I was indeed successful in getting this up onto iTunes, so you can follow it from there if you are so inclined. I have also upgraded the gear here a bit as well, so hopefully there will be at least a slight improvement in sound quality for this and future podcasts versus that first one, which was just recorded on my old iPhone. I am now coming to you through a Shure SM57 microphone, which would be ideal if I were, say, a drum kit or a guitar amp. An SM58 would be better. It's an actual vocal mic, and it wouldn't require this annoying pop filter that you can't see, but I don't actually have any of those around, so I'm just going to have to speak to you through pantyhose. So as I mentioned in the first episode, as admittedly rambling as that one was, the idea of the podcast was for it to serve as an extension of the blog. And the reason I started a blog in the middle of 2016 was partly because the absurdity of the presidential campaign had just gotten me so irritated that I just needed an outlet. But that's mostly because after all these years of reporting on, thinking about, and writing about the world and our society, culture, and government, I became convinced things were very wrong and that it might be fun or at least therapeutic to write about them, to try to alert my fellow denizens of this region of the North American continent arbitrarily demarked the USA that things simply are not what they seem. And how things seem to us is largely a product of a handful of influences. Our friends, family, coworkers, neighbors, etc. And they, like everyone, are themselves influenced by just a handful of influencers, namely their education, or educators if they're still in school, the media, and the government. Which, as I discussed in the first episode, the government influences the media more directly than any of us would care to think. And when we look at that small number of sources of influence, we have to realize that it's really even smaller than that. The mainstream media itself at the top is just a handful of conglomerates. I mean, you think of Disney, it's not just the mouse, it's Marvel, ESPN, ABC News, Star Wars. The point being, for most of us, our entire worldview is colored by just a handful of very powerful people, all of them members of the oligarchy. And that was something else I talked about at length last time. The fact that the USA is not the representative democracy with the capitalist economy that we are all taught it is in school. It's a corporatist oligarchy, and the oligarchs are the heads of all the biggest multinational corporations, as well as the entrenched bureaucrats and technocrats in government. Those unelected men who know where the real levers of power are and how to tug on them. Those are the oligarchs. The rest of us aren't. We're serfs, or peasants. Tax slaves is another good one. Proletariat works, but I really don't like it because it always sounds Marxy. But you get the picture, and since this is an oligarchy, that means the government only serves the oligarchs. Like I said last time, that's why it's worth it to Big Pharma to have government put you in a cage for smoking a plant, because Big Pharma didn't sell you that plant. And if you're smoking a plant, you're probably less apt to buy one of Big Pharma's pills. So, into a cage you go. You don't count. And to top it off, the government will pay itself, or one of its corporatist cronies, an average of $30,000 a year from the rest of our money to warehouse you for buying your drugs from Steve down the street instead of from a Big Pharma oligarch like you're supposed to. I explained all of this last time so as to describe my perspective on the world. How our society, culture, and government all interweave to form the fabric of the reality we all know. This is the reality that we get up to in the morning. Drive to work to generate tax revenue to drive home to talk about over dinner with our loved ones with and then go to bed to and then repeat until dead. But that reality is a carefully maintained and manicured lie, and a very self-serving one at that. If a kid goes to school for an average of 6 hours a day for 180 days per year from kindergarten until 12th grade, they will have been subjected to 14,000 hours of instruction exclusively shaped by the government. I'm told it was Malcolm Gladwell who first opined that it takes 10,000 hours of focused practice to become world class at a given activity. The government gives us 40% more just to be safe. And what do you know if the first thing the kids are taught in school by the government is that they need the government? And then the second thing is probably that the American form of government is the best, and without it, they'd all be in constant danger. And of course, we're taught throughout school, and this is reinforced constantly in the media, that our participation in government is the only way we can improve it. We just gotta vote harder next time. We gotta vote harder for one of the two lousy choices they give us as to who will be the figurehead that gets to distract us from the unending machinations of the government. Machinations that those figureheads themselves really can do nothing to stop. Remember, Obama was going to pull U.S. troops out of Afghanistan. 8 years later, and he's opened up fronts in Yemen and Syria, and oops, he still has troops in Afghanistan. And he was going to close Gitmo Bay, too, remember? But that's still open for business. And Trump, he was going to lock Hillary up. But she's out there selling books and whatnot and facing a lot less investigatory pressure than Trump is. So we just vote, and we vote, and we vote, and we vote, and we vote, and nothing ever changes. I mean, that's why we've been at war for 17 straight years. I mean, this war is on its third president, and it's a war that still shows no signs of abating. So what's the plan? Are we going to vote some more? And for whom? Even if we pretend presidents, and with the full backing of Congress, say, if we pretend even they would have much power in this oligarchy, who out there in the political realm at the bottom half of 2018 even inspires you? The Libertarian Party is a dumpster fire, and they're just going to probably trot Bill Weld out again, and this time at the top of the ticket, so whatever. Trump? Alright, I mean, is Rand Paul supposed to mount some sort of primary challenge or somebody else? Whatever. And on the other side, you got, Liz Warren, Joe Biden, are they going to let Bernie have at it this time without the DNC rigging the election? Come on. I mean, does any of those people really move your needles? Maybe instead of arguing over which leaders we want, we should be debating whether or not we even want to be led, or better yet, need to be led. The thought I ended with last time is that it's noble but ultimately silly to preach a need to fix government, because that presupposes the government is broken. The government, remember, is a corporatist oligarchy. At present, the government's corporatist economic setup, as well as its foreign and domestic policies, work to serve the oligarchs exclusively at the expense of all of us serfs. So I'm afraid that means the government is working exactly perfectly. They've been at it for many decades now. They've got it dialed in pretty good. They've got the machine buffered against whatever damage the occasional maverick president or stubborn Congress can do. That's for sure, anyway. Now, of course, the problem with having a blog and now a podcast where the aim is to alert people to the fact that nothing is what they've been told it is that a lot of people get very angry and upset at the mere suggestion that what I'm saying here might be true. And this is understandable. I sort of flippantly refer to it as Stockholm Syndrome on an epidemic level. Stockholm Syndrome is the mental condition where hostages come to empathize and identify with their captors. And maybe that's a bit hyperbolic here, but I don't really think it is by much. Particularly in those who still get really upset even after you explain to them who'd build the roads. Mostly, though, it's a natural human reaction born out of pride and ego. None of us wants to believe that we could be totally duped for our entire lives. I'm an atheist today, but for many years growing up and into my childhood even, I was a Christian, once a member of the Misery Synod. It was at first hard to admit that all those sleepless nights I spent in my adolescence wondering if I was going to burn in hell or not were pretty much completely pointless. Not pretty much, totally, completely pointless. And that all those prayers were just me talking to myself. Just like I am right now, as a matter of fact. Pretty much just as many people listening, let's be honest. And that's why I have such tremendous respect, by the way, for Leah Remini and everyone else on our show for publicly leaving the Church of Scientology as they have and denouncing it so completely. I mean, some of those poor people gave up everything they have and were just completely scammed out of their big chunks of their lives. And it takes amazing courage to be able to admit that, and even more to go back after them with all guns blazing the way Leah has. And to be fair, it's easy for most of us to just point and laugh at the Church of Scientology. We've had the benefit of those South Park episodes and of not being Scientologists. Turns out many are born into the church. But I remember feeling the intended swell of nationalist pride at the end of Rocky IV when I was a kid, don't you? It's okay, you can admit it, we're all friends here. Probably a lot of us felt ourselves letting Kiefer Sutherland start to convince us maybe a little bit, just a bit, maybe that torturing people is okay under some circumstances. It's okay. He was just doing his job. It's tough to admit you've been duped. Most Americans just aren't strong enough to do it, which is why I basically look at Leah Remini as Wonder Woman or Jessica Jones. She seemingly has supernatural strength, but she's not really superhuman, right? So if she can not only turn her back on something she so fervently believed in, but turn around and try with all of her might to annihilate it and make it so it can harm no one else ever again, then I've got to hope the rest of us can do the same with this armed gang that we call government and its attendant cult. But first, you have to convince people that they have, in fact, been duped. And that's hard enough, believe me. Because the idea that we need government, and that ours is the best, gets beaten into our brains during our formative years. Sure, to keep the story going, then as we get older, we're taught that government isn't perfect, it has problems, but they're problems only government can solve by us voting for the right people. What we are not taught is that any government is just an armed gang with a monopoly on the legal initiation of violence, and that this violence is government's very essence, as it is the mechanism by which it operates. Government is funded by the money it steals through threat of cage or gun. Then, everything else it does, every other law it enforces, it does so with those same two tools. So when people talk about fixing government, what they're literally saying is that we need to find the exact right gang members to do the exact right amount of violence to the exact right people in order to bring about a free and peaceful society. So Bernie Sanders proposes doing more violence to rich people. Trump wants to do more violence to brownish people. More moderate politicians, I guess, want to spread the violence out more evenly among all people. I'm pretty sure the problem is that you cannot use violence to bring about a free and peaceful society. Like, at all. A free and peaceful society would necessarily be one where every interaction between individual humans was voluntary. Wherever government spreads, whatever facet of our lives it touches, it makes voluntary interaction impossible. And in 2018, the government of the United States has grown to a point where it has crowded out almost all true voluntary interaction, except for maybe the black market. Everything is tainted by government taxation and regulation and the residual effects of those things on the market. Right now, we're seeing the ripples of tariffs turn into tsunamis of economic disruption to those whose industries are hit by them. I mean, Trump thinks he's punishing European steel manufacturers while it's Harvey Davidson back home who is crying in pain. He thinks he's putting the squeeze on China, but he's actually just taking away the domestic soybean industry's biggest customer. Oh, wait. Government can just rob us to pay back the soybean farmers. So they did. That's right. Or why did an EpiPen cost $600 when it's probably something like $6 worth of materials and manufacturing costs involved in making one? Because it costs hundreds of thousands of dollars and it takes a long time to get a new medical device approved by the FDA. And you can't just copy the EpiPen because of government-protected patents, so you'll have to make something a bit different, and that's going to have to be approved by the FDA. So the government gave the makers of the EpiPen a de facto monopoly. If the armed gang is keeping your competition out of the market, why the hell wouldn't you charge whatever you could get for whatever it is you make? And this is where the burnouts, Bernie Sanders supporters, as I call them, so I spell it with an E. Okay, so that joke only works in print. Anyway, this is where they scream, "Capitalism has failed!" Never mind that that isn't capitalism, that's corporatism, okay? And corporatism is only possible when you have a government powerful enough to give corporations what they want and then does so, like ours does. This is obviously not the same as capitalism, you see, because under capitalism, any other company with the resources, and there's plenty, would have had a $300 EpiPen out the next day. No law or regulation would be around to stop them from doing so. And by the end of the week, companies like Bic and Whammo would have been shipping units with an MSRP of $12. Because that is how capitalism works. It's based upon the free interaction of individual people for their perceived mutual benefit. When government messes up the market with bans and restrictions, tariffs, taxes, and regulations, there is no more free interaction among people. Everything has been compromised and distorted by government interference. I mean, hell, are the automakers really making the cars you want to buy today? I'm pretty sure they're not even building the ones the guys in the design labs want to draw. What they are building is what results from what happens after the compliance guys get a hold of those drawings and bring them up to the latest government safety and environmental rules. Look at a 2001 Corolla next to a 2019 model. Regulations have swelled that poor thing up so big its wheelbase is now more than an inch longer than the 2001 Camry's was, okay? So a 2019 Corolla, that's the Camry's little brother in the lineup, is bigger than a 2001 Camry was because of regulations. This is progress? Doesn't a bare-bone small sedan with a decent straight or better flat six, and okay, fine, an available four-pot, sure, but with no cameras, lane departure, traction control nonsense sound pretty good right now? It sounds a lot like something a major industry ought to be able to put on the market for a lot less than $30,000. And it would be easy to do with capitalism, but it's obviously impossible with corporatism because you can't buy that car today. Oh, I know. Those government regulations, they protect the environment, right? Meanwhile, the government's been at war on the other side of the world for 17 straight years. How do they do that? Well, they got these transport planes big enough to carry M1 Abrams main battle tanks inside and take them to wherever the government needs to use them on people who've never heard us. You think those massive jumbo jets run on batteries? Do you know what the miles per gallon rating is for an M1 Abrams main battle tank? That's a trick question. It gets gallons per mile. But your enormous new Corolla needs a 2-liter inline 4 made into a restrictive CVT, otherwise the polar bears are all going to die tomorrow. And it's not hard to imagine plenty of other aspects of our lives that would be better without government interference, beyond just the cars we drive. But we have a full-time gang running the show. The EPA can't just issue one requirement for gas mileage and emissions testing. What would it do then? What are the policymakers going to do after that? The policymakers, right? What are the lawmakers we elect and pay handsomely going to do? Their job, after all, is to make laws. They are lawmakers. So with every new law and regulation, government grows and grows and grows. Regulations beget updated regulations. The same car that was just fine 10 years ago murders Antarctic penguins today. Why? Because the government needs to keep its, quote, job, too. And so the automakers have to hire a pile of compliance people and constantly retool everything to meet new regulations, and they pass the cost on to us. So the government doesn't just rob us all straight from our paychecks. They jack us on the other end, too, by driving up the cost of everything we might want to buy with what little money they let us keep. Oh yeah, and they constantly devalue that money by inflation thanks to the Federal Reserve. But that's another whole thing for another time. Anyway, but, as always, when people like me speak this way, most folks get very uncomfortable. In their minds, by design, America is indistinguishable from the federal government. The government is America, and the president is its champion. Asking people to turn their backs and all that flag-waving, USA, USA, love it or leave it type nationalism, that's just too much for most. As I mentioned earlier, look at how much we know, quote, is just the government's self-serving lie being reinforced over and over and over via our education and then through the media. Take that away from the avid consumer of CNN or faux news. That's Fox News, spelled like French for fake. Okay, that's another one that only works in print. Anyway, trying to take away the basis of everything they know from the average mainstream media consumer is very much akin to trying to rehabilitate someone rescued from some sort of weird, isolated, abusive cult. Only while weird and abusive, this cult is anything but isolated because it's pretty much everybody all of us knows. We've all been taught to revere our nation, our Constitution, and the Founders. Just revere those things. Don't dig too deeply into the latter two. Reverence is really all that's required. But to say that the government is evil, an intractable evil that cannot be made anything but because it is based upon violence, is not an insult to the men who wrote the Constitution of the United States of America. They were fallible and imperfect men, just like the man whose magazine is the namesake of his blog was, and the guy rambling into this SM-57 is. But what they did was to conduct the most noble experiment, I think, in the history of humankind. They set out specifically to design a form of government that was intentionally weak and decentralized. Nothing on this scale had been attempted before. These were all men born under monarchy, divine rule tempered only slightly by the Magna Carta. Seeing how evil government is by its nature, they sought to bind it. But sadly, the only tool they had at their disposal to bind it was government itself and an engaged and armed population. And that's where they failed. Government cannot be used to bind government. An unbound government will soon enough spread well beyond all the restraints set upon it by itself, which is why those restraints don't work. And as it does so, it will soothe and convince the population, however armed they might be, that everything it's doing is being done for that population's own good. And wouldn't you have it, two short centuries later, that small restricted government does whatever the hell it wants, both within its borders and without. Government is the entirety of the problem, okay? That's why it can't be any part of the solution. That is the finding from the experiment that the founders conducted. But again, it is this sort of talk that makes most Americans very uncomfortable. It's like sitting down with a young Earth creationist and pointing out all the physical impossibilities in the book of Genesis. They're more apt to get agitated or angry than they are to see your points. Same goes for the vast majority of Americans suffering this distinct strain of Stockholm syndrome. What I'm saying here flies in the face of everything they quote, no. And in hearing it said, most Americans get agitated and angry. It's a devil of a problem for those of us that H.L. Mencken described as the most dangerous men all the way back in 1922. Mr. Mencken said, "The most dangerous man to any government is the man able to think things out for himself without regard to the prevailing superstitions and taboos. Almost inevitably, he comes to the conclusion that the government he lives under is dishonest, insane, and intolerable. And so if he is romantic, he tries to change it. And even if he is not romantic personally, he is very apt to spread discontent among those who are. I mean, how true is that? I can't imagine that I have had an original thought that'll be relevant 96 years after I wrote it down. But anyway, the problem that we're facing in this country is that we have an alarming dearth of those whom Mr. Mencken described as either dangerous or romantic. It seems the government heeded well Mr. Mencken's warning and adjusted the school curriculum so that most have no interest in thinking things out for themselves to begin with, and even less now in listening to the musings of those who think they have. Well, pushing against that inertia and agitating and angering people until they see that the government is the biggest problem they have, in other words, to try to cure America of this Stockholm Syndrome epidemic, might be about as Sisyphean a feat as there is, but I've got the server space available and 20 minutes of time each week to devote to being dangerous. And I really don't know what else to do, honestly. So, I'm just going to talk to you all about it, encourage you all to be dangerous, and to spread that danger far and wide. To, as they say on the internet, get people woke. H.L. Mencken was woke a century ago, and since that time, the government has figured out how to put the population to sleep on a massive scale. So that's the point of this podcast. That was the point of the blog, to be dangerous. And more importantly, to encourage others to do the same. One dangerous person is really only dangerous to himself. A whole bunch becomes dangerous to the established order and status quo. A plurality of dangerous people? Well, that might be enough to put an end to this armed gang and their charade that they call government. So until next time, be dangerous. And maybe try to find some romantic people, too.